Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 28, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's start out with the weather as we always do. Today, the high should be 26 with a low of 21. Huh, not too much difference, huh? Tomorrow, Friday, a high of 31 with a low of 28. Saturday, it's going to snow again with a high of 35 and a low of 26. Sunday, a high of 33 and a low of 16. And Monday, a high of 29 and a low of 18. I always like looking at the sunrise and sunset because that kind of helps me plan my day. So today, the sun is going to set at 5:34 p.m. And tomorrow, Friday, the sun will rise at 7:42 a.m. And it will set at 5:36 p.m. Now let's go back to the first page and take a look at the mini editorial, which we always start out with. This one is written by Patrick Rinkin of Sioux City. He writes, "The workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama want to vote to unionize, but the founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, does not want to allow mail-in voting for concerns of election security. He has changed his mind since the presidential election. Hypocrisy at its best." Our first article is by Nick Heitrich of the Journal. He writes, "Officials report promising virus rate. It's been months since Woodbury County has seen COVID-19 numbers this promising. The county's 14-day positivity rate on tests performed dropped to 8.7%, a rate that has declined steadily from 17% 3 weeks ago. The 7-day rate was even lower, with just 7% of tests showing positive results in the past week. Health officials will tell you we're not out of the woods yet. Positivity rates above 5% are a concern, but the numbers are heading in a positive direction, the best they've been since August," the Siouxland District Health Department said in its weekly report on Friday. "This is a good sign. There's plenty of reasons for optimism," District Health Deputy Director Tyler Brock said. "Northwest Iowa, as a whole, is seeing encouraging numbers. The 7-day positivity rates are nearly all in the single digits, with Cherokee County the lowest at 4%. Ida and Crawford counties are the only two with the double-digit rates at 13% and 10%, respectively. This is a legitimate drop in COVID activity," Brock said. Brock said fewer people in the area are susceptible to the virus at this time. A surge of cases in December has left a higher number of people with natural immunity, and fewer people have been tested in recent days. The number of people receiving the COVID vaccine continues to climb, and hospitalizations have dropped. As of Tuesday, 4,930 doses of the vaccine had been administered to Woodbury County residents, and 1,013 county residents have received both doses to complete the vaccination series, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. Brock said, "It's been typical during the pandemic to see numbers rise and fall. Siouxland has seen surges in the spring and fall and a dip during the summer. Other regions of the U.S. have experienced similar peaks and valleys. Whether it's going to stay down, I don't know," Brock said. "It's been hard to predict that." Siouxland District Health on Wednesday reported 20 COVID patients hospitalized in either Unity Point St. Luke's and Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center in Sioux City, 15 of them hospitalized due to the illness. The hospitals had 52 COVID patients 3 weeks ago. The IDPH reported one COVID-related death in Woodbury County on Wednesday, the 182nd in the county. In South Dakota, Union County recorded 2 deaths, raising the number there to 38. And Clay County, South Dakota, had an additional death, increasing its total to 15. "The death's a reminder that people should not let their guard down against the virus. Siouxland District Health continues to urge people to wear masks, cover your nose and mouth, practice social distancing, and avoid crowds. We, of course, understand the desire to get back to normal," Brock said. "We still have to be cautious." So let's go ahead and look at the graphic that is in our Thursday paper about coronavirus cases in their area. South Dakota has had 107,680 cases. Nebraska, 188,122 cases. and Iowa has had 315,415 cases. Let's look at county by county. In South Dakota, Yankton County has had 2,723 cases with 27 deaths. Clay County, South Dakota, has had 1,750 cases with 15 deaths. Union County, South Dakota, has had 1,847 cases with 38 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County has had 815 cases with 11 deaths. Dixon County, 596 cases with 8 deaths. Wayne County, 990 cases with 6 deaths. Thurston County, 1,028 cases with 9 deaths. And Dakota County, Nebraska has had 3,780 cases with 67 deaths. In Iowa, Lyon County has had 1,385 cases with 33 deaths. Osceola, 650 cases, 11 deaths. Dickinson County, 1,895 cases with 29 deaths. Sioux County has had 4,609 cases with 57 deaths. O'Brien County, 1,719 cases with 54 deaths. Clay County, Iowa has had 1,736 cases with 21 deaths. Plymouth County, 3,542 cases with 70 deaths. Cherokee County, 1,405 cases with 27 deaths. Buena Vista County, 3,978 cases with 31 deaths. Woodbury County, 13,172 cases with 182 deaths. Ida County, 769 cases with 30 deaths. Sac County, 1,133 cases with 15 deaths. Monona County, 707 cases with 18 deaths. And Crawford County, Iowa has seen 2,360 cases with 24 deaths. Turning back to our front page, there's an article here entitled Hanging Up Their Clippers. Hair care couple retiring after 52 years in Morningside. Ron and Donna Harris borrowed $6,000 from Kingley State Bank in 1968 so Ron could open a barbershop in Sioux City. What would happen after the shop opened was anybody's guess. Our goal was to get our kids raised and get through college, and we did that, Donna said, and then some. After 52 years of cutting and styling hair for generations of families, the two have sold Morningside Barber and Beauty and will retire on Friday. When Ron hung out his shingle at 4114 Morningside Avenue, he and Donna never really expected that they'd still be there in 2021. We didn't have a clue, Ron said. He also didn't expect that he'd share 38 years of that experience next to Donna, also a barber and a beautician. The Kingsley Pearson High School graduates married in 1965, and though both had barber licenses, Donna also had a beautician's license and couldn't work with Ron. Ron explained, back in those days, state regulations didn't permit barbershops and beauty salons to operate under the same roof. If you find that hard to believe, try this. At that time, men couldn't cut women's hair, and women couldn't cut men's hair. Wow, different times indeed. So Donna worked at a beauty salon a block down the street from Ron until 1983. By then, restrictions had relaxed, and they were able to combine their services in one shop. He was tired of my complaining about working for a big conglomerate and working for commission. This way, I was working for myself, she said. Friends kidded them about the new working arrangement, she said. They told her the business would be great, but they weren't sure about the marriage. Boat laughed. The businesses have been great, and the marriage survived with a simple strategy. I just do whatever she says, and we get along just fine, Ron said with a chuckle. Ron employed a couple other barbers at times, but it's been him and Donna for the past several years, a rare husband and wife hair care team. We enjoyed what we were doing, Donna said. I think we'd like just being around the people. Lots and lots of people through the years. They're cutting the hair of a third generation in some families, and Donna's not so sure that they haven't seen a fourth generation. Ron's had some customers his entire 52 years of business, and his first ever customer, Dr. Harry Robison, will be his final one on Friday. Ron, 75, and Donna, 74, had been discussing retirement for a year or so. After Ron had a stroke in December, those discussions intensified. We decided enough's enough, and we're ready to quit. You've just got to quit sometime, Ron said. After all, they achieved their initial goal of putting their sons Mark and Dave through college, and kept going long enough to watch grandchildren go to college, too. It was sons Mark's passing comment to a co-worker about his parents' retirement discussions that led them to a buyer, Lawton native J.C. Cam, enabling them to hang up the clippers and spend more time at their cabin on the Missouri. We're ready to be done, Ron said. It'll be just fine to go. After 52 years in business, it's a pretty good return on a $6,000 investment. Brett Hayworth writes, Iowa Representative Feenstra named to House Budget and Science Committees. The full slate of U.S. House Committee assignments has been set for freshman U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra. Feenstra on Monday was placed on the House Agriculture Committee, which was a prime committee he had sought in order to advocate for policies that could benefit farmers and agribusinesses. Now his committee roster has been finalized by landing on the House Committee on the Budget and also the Science, Space, and Technology panel. On these panels, I will work to address our growing national debt crisis and look for opportunities to advance agricultural technology to improve the lives of Iowa farmers, Feenstra said in a Wednesday release. Feenstra, a Republican from Hull, was elected to a two-year term in November in Iowa's 4th Congressional District. An allotment of three committees is considered a typical amount for House members. I will seek a common ground where I am able, but it's imperative the Budget Committee cuts back on reckless spending that will only add to our existing $27 trillion national debt. Debt reduction and control is paramount, he said in a statement. With jurisdiction over energy sources, including renewable energy and alternative fuels, I also look forward to working with my colleagues on the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology to increase our country's energy independence, by exploring ways we can improve and expand access to alternative energy sources, prioritizing ethanols and biofuels. Feenstra's office cited Department of Agriculture data that the 4th District is the top crop-growing congressional district in the nation. Wow! And also first in hog and pig production, second in overall agriculture production, and third in livestock, poultry, and products. Feenstra said he will aim on the committee to provide pricing transparency in agriculture markets, protect the renewable fuel standard and the biofuels industry, expand broadband access, bolster Iowa's relationship with top trading partners Canada and Mexico, and support family farms by keeping taxes low and fighting against burdensome regulations. Their prior 4th District Congressman, Steve King, had been on the Agriculture Committee for several terms, until House Republican leaders in January 2019 stripped him of committee positions after his controversial comments on white supremacy. Brett Hayworth also writes, Bousquet appointed Dakota County Treasurer, and I'm going to spell that because I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. It's Bousquet. A woman with a background in customer service support and office management is the new Dakota County Treasurer. The Dakota County Board of Commissioners on Monday unanimously selected Dawn Bousquet, a South Sioux City resident, from a list of four people to fill a vacancy as county treasurer. Her term as treasurer runs through December 2022. Bousquet said she has a background to perform well, leading an office that handles tasks such as property tax payments, vehicle and boat registrations, driver's license exams, and unclaimed property. She has been an office manager at a dental office handling financial details for two family businesses. Bousquet also worked in customer service at Blue Cross Blue Shield and claimed support for Great West Casualty for 15 years. The treasurer vacancy occurred after former treasurer Bob Giese was elected to a seat as a county commissioner in November. Giese was sworn in early January when the state-mandated clock of 45 days began for the commissioners to fill the position via appointment, Dakota County Auditor Joan Spencer reported a County Board Members Committee on January 4th for a second time, met with some candidates who were interested in becoming treasurer. The committee recommended Bouquet from the list that included Jolene Gubbles of Hubbard, Jane Kitegess of Jackson, and Robert Kratke of Dakota City. Giese, a Democrat from South Sioux City, won several terms as treasurer, including most recently in 2018 when he had no opposition. Giese was a state senator until resigning to ultimately win the treasurer post in 2010. Woman arrested in shooting. A woman accused of driving three men who are suspected of firing gunshots into a Morningside house and killing a Sioux City teenager on January 1st has been arrested. Liliana Gutierrez, age 20, of Sioux City, turned herself in to Sioux City police on Tuesday afternoon. She was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on one count of intimidation with a dangerous weapon and three counts of reckless use of a firearm, and bond was set at $50,000. An arrest warrant had been issued on Friday. She is accused of driving Christopher Morales, Carlos Morales, and Anthony Bauer to a house at 2637 Walker Street, where the three are suspected of firing at least 27 shots into the house, killing Mia Critis, 18, and hurting three others. Sioux City Community Policing Sergeant Jeremy McClure said in a Tuesday news release that there is no evidence that Gutierrez fired any shots. According to a complaint filed by Woodbury County Attorney Patrick Jennings, Gutierrez drove the three men, one of whom she was dating, to the house in her vehicle. Shortly after the men exited the vehicle, Gutierrez heard multiple gunshots. The three men ran back to the vehicle, got in, and Gutierrez drove away. Gutierrez has made statements indicating acknowledgement to knowingly participating in these crimes, Jennings wrote in the complaint. The complaint said that surveillance video shows the three men firing shots into the house where 20 to 25 people were gathered for a New Year's party. Christopher Morales, age 19, of Sioux City, pled not guilty Monday in Woodbury County District Court to first-degree murder, going armed with intent, and three counts of reckless use of a firearm, all charges related to the shooting. He also pled not guilty to being an adjudicated delinquent in possession of a firearm, interference with official acts, and carrying a dangerous weapon, charges stemming from his January 3rd arrest, and before he and the 9mm handgun he was carrying were linked to the homicide. His brother, Carlos Morales, age 18, and Bauer, 18, both of Sioux City, also have been charged with first-degree murder, going armed with intent, and three counts of reckless use of a firearm. Both have yet to be arraigned. Police continue to search for a second handgun and an assault-style rifle believed to have been used in the shooting. Investigators also have yet to determine how the men obtained the guns. Brett Hayworth writes, Monson picked to fill vacancy created by Taylor deployment. Mark Monson will rejoin the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors in February, following his appointment Tuesday to a position opening created by the lengthy overseas military deployment of Supervisor Jeremy Taylor. I know what to do when I go in there. I was there 12 years, Monson said in an interview outside the meeting. The supervisors, in their most recent meeting on January 19th, debated whether the position needed to be filled. Then Supervisor Matthew Ung, on the Tuesday meeting, recommended the appointment of Monson. Supervisor Keith Radig was the sole no vote in the 3-1 outcome, again asserting he was willing to wait some weeks down the line to see if the board could function sufficiently with 4 instead of 5 supervisors. It's not Mark personally. Mark, I think you're a great guy, Radig said to Monson, who technologically called into the meeting. William Burroughs, a Sioux City resident, spoke at the meeting urging the supervisors to hold your horses on making an appointment for at least 6 months as a way to save the cost of paying a supervisor's salary. Burroughs also said a woman should be considered to fill the appointment and asked Board Chairman Rocky DeWitt if he had urged the community to put forth suggested people for the vacancy. DeWitt said he had not done that, adding that as chairman he felt there was no reason to nix Ung's recommendation to place Monson up for a vote in the meeting. Mark Monson has people who will reach out to him. He is a known entity, Ung said. He's extremely knowledgeable on the mental health issues, DeWitt added. Monson, age 75, last year retired as executive director of the Missouri River Historical Development, Inc. He also served 3 4-year terms on the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors before unsuccessfully running for re-election in 2016. In the Democratic primary that year, he lost to former supervisor Party Bottebaum, who in the campaign cited Monson's support for policies proposed by Republicans on the board. In the 2016 general election, Monson ran as an independent candidate, as Bottebaum defeated Monson and Republican nominee Brian Miller. In November, Bottebaum lost his re-election bid to Taylor. On questioning from Burroughs, DeWitt said one other name he'd heard suggested for the position was Miller. Monson told the Journal that some days ago, Jeremy Taylor asked me, and he quickly decided he would like to assume the role. Monson said he'd observed the current board members as a solidly cooperative group with whom he could readily work. I just want to make sure things sail along until Taylor gets back, he added. Monson said he's well-versed in budget preparations, which is a big task the supervisors will handle through the end of March. Such budget deliberations for the 2021-22 fiscal year, including the submitted budgets of the county sheriff and attorney, filled up the rest of the meeting on Tuesday. Supervisor Justin Wright voted to add Monson, saying, "County business gets done most efficiently when a full board of 5 members is present." In the January 12th meeting, Taylor announced his upcoming deployment to the Middle East for up to 400 days in his role as a chaplain for the 734th RSG Iowa Army National Guard. Taylor left with a unit on Sunday. The school district and county, following state and federal laws, will pay his salary for 30 days once his deployment starts. Monson said he will take no pay as a supervisor during the 30 days that Taylor is paid. Assistant County Attorney Joshua Weidman said the vacancy was created with the deployment of Taylor, so Monson could be sworn in as soon as the next weekly meeting on February 2nd. Earl Horlick brings us a feature article entitled "Name That Tune, Sioux City Native Dean Darling Among Cartoonists Spotlighted in Public Museum Exhibit." Details: What? Lines with Power and Purpose, editorial cartoons, including vintage art by Sioux City native J.N. Dean Darling. When? Now through March 14th. Where? Sioux City Public Museum, 607 4th Street in Sioux City. Back in the first half of the 20th century, a newspaper editorial cartoonist was as famous and influential as any marquee-named columnist. Such A-list tunists will be part of a new traveling exhibit currently on display at the Sioux City Public Museum, 607 4th Street, now through March 14th. In cooperation with Mid-American Art Alliance, Lions with Power and Purpose has 51 original editorial cartoons from the nation's top newspapers from 1900 to 1950, which is considered the golden age of print journalism. Among the vintage cartoons will be work by Sioux City native J.N. Dean Darling, who began his career at the Sioux City Journal and the Des Moines Register. Darling later became editorial cartoonist for the New York Herald, where he won the Pulitzer Prize in 1924 and in 1943. Darling was as well known as national columnists like Walter Winchell, museum history curator Matt Anderson said. Darling's work was syndicated at hundreds of newspapers around the country. Indeed, Anderson compares such editorial cartoonists to modern-day TV anchor people when it came to influencing minds. This was especially true during this time period, which included 2 world wars, the Great Depression, and the beginning of the Cold War. While they were meant to provide comic relief, cartoonists could cut to the heart of weighty topics through deceptively simple images, Anderson said. Identifiable symbols like Uncle Sam and the Statue of Liberty could relay an idea more than words could. So might politically incorrect caricatures from World War II that revealed prejudice or xenophobia masquerading as patriotism. The seemingly friendly strokes of a cartoonist's pen often broke through the rawness and reality of hot-button issues, Anderson said. This exhibition conveys how cartoons effectively expose hypocrisy, reveal contradictions, introduce new ideas, and promote fresh perspectives at new events as new events unfold, he added. Admission is free to the Sioux City Public Museum, which is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. Protective masks or face coverings, as well as social distancing, are required. Hand sanitizing stations are available. For more information about this exhibit or other museum activities, call 712-279-6174 or visit the museum's website, siouxcitymuseum.org. Siouxland Strange. Cattle on the loose on I-29. Having dozens of cows turned loose on I-29 is a recipe for smoked ribs a la Buick. The Woodbury County Sheriff's Office responded to an accident on I-29's mile marker I-136 at around 3:36 a.m. on January 20th. Upon arrival, deputies determined a cattle hauler had lost control. Because of the crash, dozens of cattle were loose in the travel portion of the interstate. Several vehicles struck the cattle, according to a news release. For the safety of the motoring public, the south and north sides of the interstate was shut down for several hours. Numerous agencies were responding to assist in securing the scene and rounding up the cattle. The interstate was reopened at around 8 a.m. that morning. A harrowing moment at the Cleghorn Community Center. Cleghorn, Iowa used to be the kind of place where a person could park a car without much risk of having it destroyed for no apparent reason. On January 19th, the Cherokee County Sheriff's Department was dispatched to the Cleghorn Community Center, 102 West Grace Avenue, for a report of criminal mischief. During the investigation, it was determined that 46-year-old Todd Brown of Cleghorn had smashed the hood and grill of another person's vehicle, according to a press release from the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office. Damage to the vehicle was estimated at more than $1,500. An arrest warrant was requested, and Brown was later arrested for second-degree criminal mischief, a Class D felony. He was booked into the Cherokee County Jail without incident. We've reached the halfway point, everybody. You're listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 28th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Mauville, Iowa, Dr. Thomas J. Clark. Dr. Thomas J. Clark, age 76, of Mauville, passed away on Monday, January 25th at the Holy Spirit Retirement Home of Sioux City. A funeral mass will be held 10:30 a.m. on Friday at the Immaculate Conception Church of Mauville, with Monsignor R. Mark Duchesne officiating. Burial will be held at a later date. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. today at the Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Mauville. Immaculate Conception Church will require all attendees of the funeral mass to wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. Online condolences can be made at nicholasjensenfh.com. Thomas J. Clark was born April 16, 1944, in Sioux City to James and Virginia Immer Clark. He graduated from Leeds High School and then received his dental degree at the University of Iowa. He was united in marriage to Donna Corley in Iowa City in 1966. To this union, four children were born. In 1968, they moved to Mauville, where they raised their family. Tom was a dentist for Mauville for 50 years, retiring in December of 2017. Tom was a member of Immaculate Conception Catholic Church of Mauville. He was also a member of the Knights of Columbus. In his free time, he loved restoring old cars, especially Ford Mustang. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Immaculate Conception Church of Mobile. From Sioux City, Ruby Marie Cooper, age 93, passed away peacefully on Sunday, January 24th, at Holy Spirit Retirement Home. Visitation will be at 9:30 a.m. on Friday at Holy Cross Parish, St. Michael's Catholic Church, followed by a rosary at 10 a.m. and funeral mass at 10:30 a.m. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery. Those wishing to partake in the services may view a live stream on the Holy Cross Parish website or the Holy Cross Parish Facebook page. Ruby was born on November 5, 1927, in Sioux City to Thomas and Albertina Fredrickson Jordahl. She graduated from Sioux City East High School. She was employed with New York Life Insurance and Yonkers in Sioux City and Dow Air Force Base in Bangor, Maine. Ruby was a longtime volunteer at Trinity Heights, Queen of Peace. She married Bernard Beanie Cooper on March 26, 1951. She dedicated her life to her husband and 9 children, with her journey taking her from Sioux City to Bangor, Maine, for her husband's military service, back to Sioux City, then to Algona, as the wife of the first head football coach of the newly started Bishop Garrigan High School. From there, she moved back to Sioux City and was the first lady of Bishop Heelan High School football. Their journey continued with her role as the wife of the University of South Dakota head football coach and athletic director, and then on to Terre Haute, Indiana, supporting her husband's athletic directorship for 10 years at Indiana State University. She then spent the next many years with her husband helping Trinity Heights Queen of Peace transform from a vision to the spiritual reality it is. Ruby was the co-pilot in this successful journey. Her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and his mother, the Blessed Virgin, were with her every step of the way, with rosaries routinely said on the way to countless business banquets and events. Her faith shaped every interaction. In her last years at Holy Spirit, her kindness touched all who entered her room, leaving them better for having stopped by. Memorials in Ruby's name may be made to Trinity Heights Queen of Peace, Holy Spirit Retirement Home, or Bishop Heelan Catholic High School. Susie E. Vasky, from Remsen, Iowa, age 72, died Monday, January 25th, 21. Services, January 29th at 10:30 a.m., St. Mary's Catholic Church in Remsen. Burial, after the service, St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery, Remsen. Visitation, January 28th, from 4 to 7 p.m., Fish Funeral Home and Monument, Remsen, and resumes 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Masks and social distancing are required. From Bronson, Iowa, Dixie L. Wolfe, age 79, died Tuesday, January 26th. Service, February 1st at 7 p.m., Christy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside Chapel. Visitation, February 1st, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. From Mapleton, Iowa, Nora A. Flanagan, age 88, died Tuesday, January 26th. Services, January 30th at 1 p.m., St. Mary's Catholic Church in Mapleton. Burial after the service, St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery. Visitation, January 29th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are with Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home of Mapleton. And that concludes today's obituaries. Let's do the quote of today and today's Bible verse. The quote of the day is by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who lived 1809 to 1894, a very well-known American poet and writer. He wrote, "Without wearing any mask we are conscious of, we have a special face for each friend." Today's Bible verse is from Psalms chapter 1, verse 3. "He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does, prospers." Well, now it's time for sports. Zach James writes, about the Siouxland Athlete of the Week. Beery embodies team-first mentality. Brooklyn Beery doesn't take her role for granted. Beery is a senior on this season's Kingly Pearson High School girls basketball team, and she's part of the reason why the Panthers are 17-0 heading into the Western Valley Conference tournament that starts this weekend. Beery is the second leading scorer for the Panthers, averaging 13.4 points per game. Beery scored 45 combined points in the three games that the Panthers played last week, and she led her team in scoring in two of those wins. Because of that, Beery is this week's Siouxland Athlete of the Week. Having a team that guides me and a coach that keeps our team going to keep pushing ourselves, we all put all our work in, Beery said. It's an amazing accomplishment. Beery's main goal each night, however, is to get as many of her teammates involved as possible. Beery tries to look for an open teammate when she doesn't have an open lane to drive to the rim, or if she doesn't have an open shot near the three-point area. I contribute passing, and I always make sure I have my eyes on the whole court, Beery said. I am not just the person who likes to shoot the ball. I like to pass because I'm an extremely benefited team player, and that is very important with basketball. Beery isn't the only one on the KP roster who lives out the team-first attitude on a daily basis. Beery is fifth on the team in assists with 30, and the team leader is Abby Bailey with 47. The Panthers have 221 assists, which is ninth in Class 1A. There are five Siouxland teams in the top 10 in Class 1A assists, led by Newell Fonda with 315. Our team is even and our bench is very deep, Panthers coach Nicole Goodwin said. Certain nights, a team is going to try to shut down a certain player, but this team has girls who can step up to our success. This team is reading each other so much better from last year to this year. The team aspect is very important to the Panthers, and Beery has been a big believer in that message. We just look out for each other, Beery said. It doesn't matter who scores the most. Basketball is a team sport. If I'm not open, I'll bounce it to someone. If I am open, I'll look for a layup or something else. It's very fun playing on this team. I've never had more fun in my life. Beery isn't one who has been at Kingsley Pearson for all 4 years. She started her high school days at MVAOCOU High School, but has been with the Panthers since her junior year. At first, Beery wasn't sure how she was going to get along with the team. She had never hung out with anyone from Kingsley or Pearson before she arrived, and she wasn't sure whether the Panthers were willing to add another friend to their group. That's when current senior Abby Bailey made the first introduction and made sure they accepted Beery. Bailey took Beery under her wing, making sure she knew where all her classes were, and invited her to lunch and other social outings. Beery quickly made new friends with the Panthers, and those bonds have especially helped on the basketball court. It was honestly a quick connection, Beery said. Abby came and guided through my first couple of weeks. We just became really good friends, and I started becoming friends with other girls. It was very helpful. I knew a lot of them, but I didn't know them a lot. That next sports season made it seem like I had been there forever. They guided me to become best friends. Jays rally over Hawks. Bonderson DeRocher lead number 5, Gellin, Remsen. Lamar's Gellin's dynamic backcourt would not let the Jays lose here on Tuesday night. Keaton Bonderson and Carter DeRocher combined for 47 points as Gellin toppled War Eagle Conference rival Remsen, St. Mary's, 68-60 to overtime. Bonderson, a sophomore, fired in a career-high 34 points, while DeRocher, a junior, tacked on 23 for the fifth-ranked Iowa Class 1A Jays. Gellin, improving its overall record to 15-1, completed a regular season sweep of the number 9 Hawks. St. Mary's, 13-2, has lost only to Gellin. The Jays moved to 8-0 in the War Eagle, while St. Mary's is 4-2. Gellin won the previous matchup, 62-46, on December 23rd in Lamar's, and has reeled off 9 in a row since its only loss, 74-48, at Orange City Unity Christian on December 21st. Gelin outscores the Hawks 10-4 in the 4-minute overtime, capping a rally that began in the fourth quarter. The Jays were 8-for-10 from the free throw line in overtime, while St. Mary's was limited to 4 late free throws. Anytime Rumson and Gelin get together, it's a great game, no matter what the record is, Gelin coach Mike Langle said. It's competitive. The guys like playing each other. They like playing hard against each other. And quite frankly, they don't like losing to the other team. I felt confident once we got into overtime. Carter was coming around with a couple of his shots, and Bondo was playing well, and our defense had picked it up a little bit. We knocked down a lot of big free throws at the end. Gelin actually had the final chance to win in regulation. St. Mary's drew even at 56-56 when Levi Waldschmidt made the first of two free throws with 43.4 seconds left. The Jays then worked the ball around before calling time twice, the last with 8 seconds remaining, but couldn't get a shot off. DeRocher made a basket to start the extra session and then drove to the hoop and was fouled, converting both free throws. Gelin put it away by scoring 9 points before the Hawks finally made 2 free throws with 17 seconds remaining. We made a couple of crucial turnovers in overtime and then had to start fouling, and it got out of control, St. Mary's co-head coach Scott Rudin said. I thought our effort was really good. I told the boys they beat us 16 the first time, and you took them to overtime this time. We have a few more things we need to tweak, and hopefully we get another shot at sub-state. Bonderson was 13-for-8 from the floor, splashing 5-of-8 three-pointers. He twisted his ankle after stepping on a St. Mary's player's foot on the final play of the game and had to apply some ice afterward, but was all for the better after the big victory. They like to slow the game down, and we like to play a little bit faster, but we just executed better, Bonderson said. These types of games are so fun, I can't describe it. This is one of the only games I get nervous for all year. St. Mary's erased a 5-point deficit with 3 straight 3-pointers in the final 1 minute 24 seconds of the third quarter. Shore nailed one from the corner at the buzzer, putting the Hawks in front 47-43. Gelin, though, fought back to draw even at 51-51 on a steal and layup by Bonderson midway through the fourth. The teams traded leads the rest of regulation play. I thought we had them on the ropes, but they have 2 really good players, and we had a hard time shutting them down, Rudin said. Our plan was to shut them down, but there were 3 or 4 possessions where we lost track of them, and they got the open look, and that really killed us. That was 10 or 12 points that would have made the difference in the game. Both Bonderson and DeRocher are capable of scoring anywhere on the floor, each average just over 20 points per game. Those two feed off a lot of things that go on with the rest of the team defensively, and they can score, Langle said. Coach Brian Wilkin does a nice job of running the offense and getting those guys isolated to get them the ball, and they can knock them down when they get a chance. St. Mary's got 15 points from sophomore Jason Bunkers, 13 from Shorg, and 10 from Austin Jensen. The Hawks had won 7 in a row since their first loss to Gelin. DeGene leads Falcons, Ida Grove. The OABCIG high school boys basketball team scored 29 points throughout the third quarter on Tuesday to beat the Ridgeview Raptors 70-45. Falcon senior Cooper DeGene scored a game-high 31 points. DeGene made 12 shots, and he hit 4 3-pointers. DeGene, the Adidas Football Player of the Year, also collected 8 rebounds and 8 assists. Aaron Van Dusen scored 12 points for the Falcons. Easton Harms hit 4 shots, good for a 10-point game. The OABCIG hit 49% of its shots in Tuesday's win. In the Boyden Hill-Rock Valley game, it was Boyden Hill 70, Rock Valley 69 in overtime. Dayton Brostung hit the game-winning shot with 10 seconds left on Tuesday to help the Comets stay unbeaten at 15-0. The game was tied at 61-61 at the end of regulation. Tanner Tesla recorded a double-double with 23 points and 10 rebounds. Bernstein also had 5 rebounds. Marcus Kelderman scored 11 points. Girls basketball roundup. Cherokee stays unbeaten. Cherokee's Lexi Pingle scored 19 points to help the Braves stay unbeaten with a win in a 52-42 Lakes Conference girls basketball game against Estherville Lincoln Central played in Cherokee on Tuesday. Jemaine Nichols also had 12 points for Cherokee. Jaden Nichols had 13 points to lead the Midgets 14-3. Newell Fonda 80, Emmitsburg 42. Bailey Seavers led all scorers with 17 points, and the Mustangs went on to win in a Twin Lakes Conference girls basketball game in Newell on Tuesday. Abby Shaney had 16 points for the Eahawks. Newell Fonda is now 14-1. George Little Rock, 52, Okoboji, 45. Led by Mackenzie Post's 14 points, the Mustangs held off the Pioneers in a Siouxland Conference girls basketball game played in Milford on Tuesday. Montana Wilson had a double-double with 16 points and 11 rebounds to lead Okoboji, which dropped 2-14. Remsen St. Mary's, 57, Galen Catholic, 45. Mia Bunkers scored 14 points, and Whitney Jensen added 10 points to lead the Hawks to a War Eagle Conference girls basketball win in Remsen on Tuesday. Lauren Haying also had 14 points to lead Galen 9-8. St. Mary's improved to 11-5. Unity Christian, West Sioux. Unity Christian had 65, West Sioux 40. Janie Schoenhoven had 16 points and 11 rebounds to lead the Knights to win in a War Eagle Conference girls basketball game in Orange City on Tuesday. Gracie Schoonover also had 16 points, and Tyra Schweetman had 13 points for Unity Christian. Megan Waterman led West Sioux 7-9 with 15 points. Scotland 57 to Alchester Hudson 29. Grace Frieda scored 24 points to lead Scotland to a girls' basketball win on Tuesday evening. Ella Sarek, Ellie Doring, and Abby Wolf had 5 points each to lead Alchester Hudson. Ridgeview 68, OABCIG 59. The Raptors scored 28 points in the fourth quarter on Tuesday to beat the Falcons. Anya Christmacher led Ridgeview with 18 points. Prep Wrestling Lions Rally over BHRV. George, Iowa. The Central Lion George Little Rock Co-op Wrestling Team defeated Boyden Hall Rock Valley on Tuesday by a score of 55-16. Gabino Vargas led things off for the Nighthawks with a 16-3 major decision over Cam Borman at 106 pounds. Then the Lions won the next four matches. Lane Kruger won by forfeit at 112. Then 120-pounder Donovan Morales pinned BHRV's Daniel Moniz at the 5-minute, 24-second mark. Lions 127-pounder Brock Clarenbeek beat Julian Reyes-Palma 9-4. Jacob Pitleski ended the early rally for the Lions at 132 with a 19-7 major decision over Logan Seibrecht. The two teams traded match wins until the end when the Lions won four straight to finish the night. Kalen Meyer led off the night-ending rally with an 89-second pin over Casey Pick at 182. Josh Reeb followed suit at 195 as he pinned BHRV's Kevin Quijada at 36 seconds. Lions 220-pounder Dylan Winkle pinned Victor Urbina in 151. Then at 285, Lyle Moore won by a fall over Jesus Garcia in 117. Vermillion 34, Howard 31. The duel was decided on the final match, and Vermillion 170-pounder Jack Kratz defeated Ty Bayer 8-4 to give the Tanagers the win. Vermillion led 12-0 early after two wins by forfeit. Tanagers 285-pounder Zach Brady pinned William Rentz in 136. Going back to the boys' basketball scores, Hartley Melvin Sanborn 80, South O'Brien 61, Sam Hinds scored 23 points to lead the Hawks to a War Eagle Conference boys basketball win in Hartley on Tuesday. Lance Behrens also had 18 points, and Ben Hack 14 points for HMS 8-6. Josh Johansson had 19 points, and Jake Wallen 18 points for the Wolverines 8-7. Unity Christian 76, West Sioux 61. The Knights led 43-25 at the half on Tuesday. The Knights, 9-5, had three scorers, Clayton Bosma, Jacob Vandong, D-O-N-G-E, and James Bosma, who each had 18 points. Mason Kopak had 5 shots to lead the Falcons, 7-8, with 16 points. Booker Walsh scored 10 points. River Valley, 64, Westwood, 57. Garrett Trapp scored 38 points to lead the Wolverines to Tuesday's win. Trapp was 12-for-24 from the floor, and he made 4 three-pointers. Trapp was also 10-for-10 from the free-throw line. Colton Johnson scored 12 points. Westwood, 2-14, led 27-24 at the half. Central Lions, 63, Sheldon, 56. Zach Luttmer scored 26 points to lead the Lions to a Siouxland Conference boys basketball win in Sheldon on Tuesday. Mason Gerleman also had 16 points, and Cooper Spice 15 for Central Lion. Shane Brower had 19 points to lead the Orabs. George Little Rock, 38. Okoboji, 35. Colin Mao scored 8 points to lead the Mustangs to a Siouxland Conference boys basketball win in Milford on Tuesday. Will Huffman had a game-high 10 points for the Pioneers, 7-8. The win was the first of the season for GLR, 1-15. Alta Aurelia, 71, Sioux Central, 63, in overtime. The Warriors outscored the Rebels 14-6 in the overtime frame on Tuesday. Cade Rower led the Warriors 11-3 with 24 points. Tanner Randall had 14, and Trey Engelman scored 11. Jacob Hargan scored a double-double for Sioux Central, 7-7. He had 24 points and 13 rebounds. Connor Christian had 13 points, and Carter Butcher had 12. Newell Fonda, 69, Emmitsburg, 60. Mustang sophomore Carter Severs made 8 shots and hit all 7 free throw attempts en route to a 25-point game. Caden Meyer scored 14 points, and Trey Jungers had 35. Mock Floyd Valley, 66, Sibley Ochaden, 53. The Dutchman, 6'9", outscored the Generals 22-11 in the third quarter en route to the win. Carter Brower led the Generals 7-7 with 17 points, while Dougie Noonkester had 14. West Lyon, 70, Sioux Center, 41. Wildcats junior Caleb Vulcan hit 4 threes on Tuesday to score a game-high 20 points. Javon Meyer scored 17 points, while Darren Meyer hit all 6 of his shots for a 14-point game. Well, let's look at some more girls' basketball scores. Sioux Central, 51, Alta Aurelia, 35. The Rebels, 12-4, held the Warriors to 4 points in the third quarter. Rebels senior Taylor Krager scored a game-high 21 points. Brandy Krager chipped in with 11 points. Shea Peterson led AA, 115, with 13 points. Storm Lake, St. Mary's, 61. GTRA, 27. Panthers junior Danica Demers scored a game-high 24 points. She hit 5 three-pointers and 9 total shots. Ellie Bacon hit 4 threes for 12 points, and Natalie Green scored 10. Sydney Hurd had 4 steals. Trinity Christian, 39. Harris Lake Park, 17. Alyssa Masson led the Tigers with 11 points in their third win of the season. Shauna Hawksbergen had 8 points and 5 rebounds. Zella Ingham led HLP, 0-15, with 8 points. George Little Rock, 52, Okoboji, 45. Mustangs senior Mackenzie Post scored 14 points on Tuesday. The Mustangs moved to a 5-11 with the win. Pioneers junior Montana Wilson led her team with 16 points and 6 rebounds. Boyden Hall, 44, Rock Valley 27. The Comets 8-8 held the Rockets to 10 second-half points on Tuesday. Lydia Grond led the Comets with 15 points, including 3 threes. Abby Heemster led the Rockets 9-6 with 14 points and 9 rebounds. 4 of those were offensive rebounds. Central Lions 66, Sheldon 52. The Lions led 36-21 at halftime on Tuesday. Hayden Hymanson led the Lions 14-2 with 17 points. Addison Cloisterburg hit 4 threes en route to a 15-point game. Desta Hugendorn scored 14 points for Central Lion. Sheldon's top two scorers were Malaya Klein-Hesselink, aged 20, and Brooklyn Grady, 18. Klein-Hesselink hit 4 threes. Oh my gosh. Well, everybody, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 28th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening. Stay warm and have a great day.